This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. In a repetition of history that has nightmare qualities for many residents of Whidbey Island, the U.S. Navy is once again proposing to vastly increase its field carrier landing practice operations, along with the number of the noisy Growler aircraft at Ault Field and the outlying landing field in Coopville. Because of its uncanny relevance today, this week on The Compass, we reprise a show originally produced 3 years ago about a Port Townsend community meeting protesting the Navy's plans at the time of the last proposed expansion. So now, let's go inside The Compass.
In the summer of 2012, I had spent a good part of the summer sailing up in BC. I came home in the end of August and heard my first growler session over my house and developed atrial fibrillation and ended up in the hospital. I'm a resident of Coopville, lifetime resident, third generation. My son's the fourth. And this growler noise issue is about to drive us off Whidbey Island. And so we're literally fighting for our existence on our homeland in Coopville. We're living in a national treasure that's being condemned by the U.S. Navy as we speak.
The speaker is Whidbey Island attorney Ken Picard, and growlers are the noisy new generation of Navy fighter jets that all too frequently shatter the peace of his home in Coopville as Navy pilots training to land on aircraft carriers practice touch-and-go exercises known as Field Carrier Landing Practice, or FCLPs, at the nearby outlying landing field, known more familiarly as the OLF. More than 100 people crowded into the Cotton Building on Port Townsend Water Street one recent evening to hear Picard and several other members of Citizens of Ebie Preserve, the organization Picard and several friends founded to fight the practice he says is harming to humans and wildlife alike, speak about their experiences and what they have learned about the harmful effects of the aircraft noise to which they are regularly subjected. The event was organized by former mayor and current Port Townsend City Councilwoman Michelle Sandoval after she found out that no public hearing had been scheduled by the Navy for Port Townsend in the scoping phase of an environmental impact statement for an expansion at Naval Air Station Whidbey Island that Picard says will turn it into a mega base that will have detrimental effects throughout the northern Puget Sound.
We're about to get some or all of the 110 P-8s that are being built. Those are 737s that are converted for electronic warfare, for submarine hunting. You know, they're 737s. And we still are trying to get the numbers on the growlers, how many growlers we're going to get, but up near 100. And so essentially what's happening at Naval Air Station Whidbey Island is it's turning into a mega base. They're making it into a mega air station. When they first were discussing transitioning to this new aircraft, the Navy prepared what's called an environmental assessment. And it's like a very abbreviated review, environmental review under NEPA. And what they claimed at the time was that they would have fewer aircraft, fewer operations, and the planes would be quieter. And I remember back when that came out, we were all in Central Whidbey relieved because they were going to be flying less and they were going to be quieter. So we thought, this is wonderful news. Well, the reality is that they substantially increased the number of flights. They went from the 3,000-4,000 operations a year to 12,000 operations at OLF. The planes are clearly louder, and they were just lying, basically, just blatantly lying. And so we decided that a good thing to do would be to sue them. And since we had them by the short hairs, and they had lied, and they knew it, and we knew it, and everybody knew it, they basically conceded the lawsuit. I mean, shortly after we filed it, they said, okay, we'll do the EIS. Now, we don't see, and I've never seen or thought of the EIS as being the end all of this problem. I mean, it's a process. It's kind of a bullshit process. With the Navy, particularly usually when there's an applicant for a project and an environmental impact statement is prepared, there's a decision maker, and that's usually a hearing examiner or an administrative law judge or a city council, and they make the decision, not the applicant. With the Navy, they do their own EIS and they do their own decision making. So it's kind of a closed circuit there.
Picard said that the touch-and-go practice flights at the outlying landing field near Coupeville sometimes run continuously from 10 in the morning until 2 a.m. the next day, with the Growler jets passing at a few hundred feet overhead about every 3 minutes. He said he had once measured the decibel levels inside his house at 94, which is about the same as running a gas-powered lawnmower inside the house.
They claim that they have to do it at OLF, but they don't have to do it because they haven't done it all the rest of last year, and then they said they're going to start flying January 1st, and they did start flying right after the first of the year, very gingerly, like two planes in a loop or something, very like maybe 2 hours max. And then once the city of Port Townsend, Michelle, thank you, and the mayor and your council, and the Island County commissioners from San Juan Island, who weren't notified of this expansion to add more growlers and the opportunity to comment on the EIS. They didn't notify Port Townsend or San Juan County. They wrote letters. I think your new congressman intervened. The Navy agreed to extend the comment period until the end of this month, which is just this week. And so, surprisingly, they quit flying during the comment period, right? It's just a kind of a manipulative thing. We don't want to stir everybody up, so they'll comment. So we're going to quit flying till the comment period ends, which is the last day of this month when we expect they will return. Now they are putting in the paper the week before, and you can go online, Whidbey News Times, and they have their flight schedule in there, although they don't always adhere to their flight schedule. That's the other thing. Now I've been leaving home and then they don't fly. So it's like, I mean, so now I'm calling them up and saying, how come you're not flying tonight? I'm all packed up. I left home and you're not even there. What the heck? You know, what we've learned is we stopped them from flying at OLF. So they do more flights up at Naval Air Station Whidbey Island, and now they're impacting all the people on Lopez, San Juan Island, Fidalgo, Laconer, Camino, more. So when we get relief, it's more harm to other people. And so lately we've decided, well, the real solution is to get the growlers out of Naval Air Station Whidbey Island, period. We just think they're a bad fit. You know, they're just the wrong aircraft for this region. And the Navy has other places they can put these planes. The planes were originally scheduled to go to a base called China Lake. It's in the Mojave Desert. The Navy owns 1 million acres of desert around the airfield there. At the last minute, there was some horse trading that happened, which we haven't figured out yet in DC. So anyway, so these planes ended up here coming to Whidbey Island instead, and now this is what we're dealing with.
It's not just the Navy with whom the citizens of Eby's Preserve are annoyed. After addressing the crowd for about 40 minutes, Picard turned the podium over to his Coupeville neighbor, Michael Monson, who took aim at the developers, realtors, and public officials who had pressed forward in recent decades with developments right in the flight paths of the fighter planes.
Right here is a development called Admiral's Cove. These planes come up, circle around here, as you well know, you know, you guys are, and they'll come around here and come in right over Admiral's Cove. 200 feet?
250 to 300 is what the pilots told us, at 134 decibels.
One of the problems we're having in Island County is up near Alt Field, they did establish the APZ, which is the Accident Potential Zone, where you cannot build, you can't do this, you can't do that. Down in the Admiral's Cove area, okay, because of greed, the developers did not want to stop building in that area. So as a result, the accident potential zone was never established. According to the Navy, above 65 decibels, LDN, which is an average, no new building permits should be given. Okay? Don't build a residence there. Island County still, to this day, issues building permits for the entire area, including Admiral's Cove, where no building should be built.
Occupational and environmental health nurse Karen Bowman was the next to speak. When she was done, it seemed a pretty sure bet that no member of that audience would be likely to be making a down payment on a house in the flight pattern of the Growlers anytime soon, a flight pattern that takes in the Northern Olympic Peninsula, if a map prominently displayed at the front of the room was to be believed.
So Washington, the WAC code says that the maximum noise in a residential area should not surpass 55 decibels. In the evening, it shouldn't surpass 45 decibels. The EPA sets an average in a 24-hour period to not exceed 70 decibels. But when Lilly did the noise measurement study, the LMAX levels ranged from 113.4 up to 119 decibels. And the predicted L average over a 24-hour period was 64.1 to 75. So it far surpasses. They're just totally breaking the law there. And for people on the job, if the noise in the facility is 85 decibels or greater, they're required by law, that company is, to implement a hearing conservation program. Because we know at 85 decibels and above, hearing loss begins. So people who are listening to these jets going around and around and around all the time, it increases their stress. It releases these fight or flight hormones like cortisol, catecholamines. It creates a cascading effect, these stress hormones. And it affects all parts of our body. Our bodies are so holistic, you know. And so when one system kind of falters, then quite often the rest of the systems falter. And that's what my research showed. There is some research. We need to do more research on immunotoxicity and noise. Psychosocial impacts and cognition, it affects that. And the strongest research that I found, which is really scary, is the cardiovascular implications, because it does cause this noise, especially commercial aircraft noise and military aircraft noise, and in particular, low-flying military aircraft noise. And somebody said that they fly like 250, 300. That's low. Causes cardiac disease, causes hypertension, ischemic heart disease, myocardial infarction, which is heart attacks, and death. There is some research that shows that sleep loss, which is a major health impact with the aircraft noise, can weaken your immune system. And also noise exposure can increase susceptibility to viral infections and how the body relates to toxic exposures in the workplace. And it also, if things get too loud, we get cognitively impaired. We can't learn new tasks. We have problems with memory. We have the physiological effects that I was talking about. Psychological effects, we get anxious, we get stressed out, we get angry, depressed. As I mentioned before, it does affect learning. It also affects work and the tasks that you do at work. It also increases the potential for accidents.
The bulk of the data presented in the course of the evening pertained to Whidbey Island, but because the published flight patterns of the training flights take them right over or very near Port Townsend, a lot of concern about the effects of increased noise levels not only on health but on property values here was expressed in the question and answer period that followed the formal presentation.
If they do these flights, are we going to have to list this on our real estate if we want to sell or buy?
This is a huge issue that, Judy, what's your blog address?
It particularly affects the Whidbey Island, but it is disclosuredeception.wordpress.com. And so that has to do with how the disclosure that we've had really affected prices. If they decide that they want to implement a disclosure to warn future buyers of your property of the noise here, then your property values are going to be affected. So it's a very scary, and the time will come when you'll be facing that as we are now.
We feel like what we're doing is shooting ourselves in the foot, and it's a sense, because the more attention we draw to this, the lower our property values, you know. So, you know, the problem, part of the problem we have on Whidbey Island is that
Whidbey is so dependent on this Navy money rolling in that our politicians, our electeds, put that on the highest priority over our health, our property values, our quality of life. It's all about dollars coming into the community. You don't have that so much in these other areas. For example, the city of Port Townsend, first government officials in almost 2 years to come forward on this issue. Same with the island or the San Juan County commissioners. Our commissioners, they're all afraid. They're sold out to the Navy. They want that federal money. That just scares them to death. The base will close, and oh my God, what's going to happen?
You mentioned legal redress. Is there any possibility of doing any sort of an injunction in federal court against some of this activity? Is that something?
Our lawyer has researched. David Mann sent me an interesting email the other day. He said, possibly because of these adverse health impacts, which are irreversible injury that's being inflicted on us, that a court may deem it reasonable to enjoin the activity until the environmental impact statement is completed. My vote was, let's do it, even if we lose, because it's going to draw more attention to the issue, it's going to get more publicity, and the only thing I was worried about is that the court would impose terms against us and make us pay the Department of Justice legal fees. But our lawyer seeming to think that we might have a shot at it, and I need to talk to him again. This is all just kind of unfolding since they just started flying again a week or two ago. So we're looking into injunctive relief. It seems slim. We're looking at other possible causes of action. We're looking at inverse condemnation claims, all our property values. Basically, they're stealing our property values away from us by this noise. They should be paying us.
Towards the end of the meeting, former Port Townsend mayor and current city councilwoman Michelle Sandoval had this to say.
I don't think that we should consider this a done deal. We do not have to say yes. We keep saying no. We go down to Olympia. We go to Washington, D.C. We keep saying no. This isn't okay. What I will say, though, is that part of the problem is so systemic. I mean, all of you know that. And this all has to do with economic development. And so while our Democratic representatives are in office here, we need to support them, but we also need to be firm with them. There's a lot of pressure on them to be hawks and not doves. The military brings money. I feel for them. They're under pressure for jobs. You know, this is looked at as a good thing, all of this Navy stuff. And yet at the same time, if they stand up for their community, so we have to do it in a careful fashion. We have to do it with consideration to them as support, not nastiness, but say to them, we won't take this. This is a no. We like you. We support you. And you need to work for us, please.
The Navy didn't send a representative to the meeting, so a couple of days later, I phoned Naval Air Station Whidbey Island Public Affairs Officer Mike Welding. Since much of the talk on Tuesday's meeting had focused on damages to Coopville residents from the field carrier landing practices at the OLF, I decided to start there. Is Coopville really essential to your operations?
Oh, we consider Coopville to be a critical asset for this air station. In fact, it is an integral part of Whidbey Island's Naval Air Station.
I mean, what is it that you can do at Coopville that you can't do elsewhere?
Well, we can do FCLPs in other places, but when we do it over here at Alt Field is a busy multi-mission type airfield. We do lots of different types of air operations here. So when we do FCLPs at Alt Field, you know, that has impacts on all the other operations that we do.
Are there other alternatives the Navy has?
What do you mean by alternatives?
Alternatives to the OLF.
Well, there is no alternative to the OLF in the Pacific Northwest. There's to do field carrier landing practice. Now, when the aircraft will deploy somewhere else, like Fallon, Nevada, or Lemoore, California, if the aircraft are down there for some other reason, they can do FCLPs down there. But to make that a recurring practice from here for the aircraft to fly down there, that's not a very efficient or cost-effective way to do FCLPs.
One of the things that came up in the meeting the other night was that, the Navy has like 1 million acres out at China Lake. And why don't they just do the touch-and-go exercises out there?
It's important to remember that it has to closely replicate aircraft carrier landings, and that means doing that operation close to sea level. So when you do an FCLP, you really cannot go any higher than 1,000 feet above mean sea level. This makes China Lake unsuitable for FCLPs because it is 2,200 feet above mean sea level.
So that practice at that elevation would be useless?
Well, power settings and all that stuff is going to play an important part into it.
So I gather that last year, after the Citizens for EVs Reserve filed or threatened to file a lawsuit, that there was like an 8-month cessation of the use of the landing field. Is that right?
Yes.
And so where did operations go during that period of time?
All those operations, all those FCLP operations that needed to get done were pushed back over to Alt Field.
I see. And what was the reason for that?
Well, the reason for that was we wanted to remain consistent with what we told people we would do in the 2005 environmental assessment. We told people that we would do 6,120 FCLPs at Coopville.
Is that like an ongoing plan to do about 6,000? Or, I mean, I guess I heard the number 12,000 mentioned the other night.
Well, I don't know who told you 12,000, but 6,120 is the number of FCLPs that we will target to do at Coopville over the year. That'll sort of be the top layer. There might be a little give and take up at that number, but that's what we're going to try to stick to.
Welding's insistence that there was no intention to increase the number of operations at Coopville confused me. Wasn't that what the environmental impact statement was all about? But Welding said that he was not qualified to discuss questions about the EIS and referred me to Ted Brown, the public affairs officer at Fleet Forces Command in Norfolk, Virginia. Brown's answers to the questions differed from Welding's, but still left the Navy's true plans obscure.
Historically, that's a very low number for Coopville, and we have had operations close to 40,000 a year at Coopville before. So if you look at the historical numbers, we are actually at a very low point right now as far as the operations at Coopville.
You know, what we were told at the meeting the other night, and you can tell me if this is accurate or not, is that there's a plan to increase the use of the OLF.
There is, and again, that is undetermined at this point as to how much of an increase or if there is an increase, but there conceivably could be. We are looking again at adding two expeditionary squadrons. We're also adding three aircraft to the fleet replacement squadron. That would add some to the use of Coopville because, again, the fleet replacement squadron pilots and aircraft do use Coopville, unlike the expeditionary squadrons. But we're also going to look at the balance of operations between Coopville and Alt Field and try to come up with what actually works best. And again, it's way too soon in the process to have any numbers or speculate on what the alternatives will be because they have not yet been developed.
I see, but presumably in order to come up with an environmental impact statement, you actually need to have some kind of figure for that, for like the maximum number.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, in the draft, once we publish that next spring, we will have a range of alternatives that will be part of the document that we will make public.
Usually with environmental impact statements, you know, there's some kind of impartial body that reviews the impact statement and declares what mitigations shall be. But is it true that the Navy actually will be reviewing this EIS itself?
That is my experience with every one of these that I've worked on, and I've worked on quite a few. The final decision will be made by the Secretary of the Navy's office.
So it's the office of the Secretary of the Navy, because that was the other question I had. Like, you know, who is the actual person who does the review, and is it a panel of people? I mean, how does that work?
No, it's actually typically going to, it could be the Secretary of the Navy. It typically is going to be the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Installations, Energy, and Environment.
I've actually kind of covered some previous Navy EIS processes, including the application for the explosives handling wharf at Bangor, where actually the public input was pretty much universally in opposition. And actually, to most of the critiques of the project that were submitted, the Navy put out pretty much a form letter kind of response. So I'm just wondering if, is there any sort of, review process or appeal process that people can go through when, a decision is just sort of handed down that seems to be saying that the Navy gets to do what the Navy wants to do.
And that's not the way the National Environmental Policy Act, which is the law governing these EISs, works. There is no review process after the decision is made. Now, there are several opportunities for public input throughout the process. We are just concluding the scoping period today.
Right.
And we had a lengthy scoping comment period that began September 5th. The Navy will look at these scoping comments, and hopefully some of them will tell us something that we didn't know before, and we can use that to produce a better document. Once we actually release the draft EIS to the public, which we anticipate being sometime next spring, the spring of 2015, then we will have another public comment period and have more public meetings. And that would be comments on the draft, how well we did in the draft. After that, we would start working on the final EIS. Once the final EIS is released to the public, there is a mandatory 30-day wait period. That's essentially for other agencies to review the document. It's a mandatory 30-day wait period. It could be longer than that, mm-hmm. but it has to be at least 30 days. And after that, the Secretary of the Navy or his designated representative will issue a record of decision. And that concludes the EIS process.
I see. So if there's any feeling that the decision was not a good one or an inappropriate one, there is no appeal procedure?
Not through the EIS process. No, there's not.
I see. So that would basically be the point at which something would have to be taken to the courts to decide.
Exactly.
And I guess there's no way you could really guess this, but the other question I had was, what is the measure of harm? I mean, suppose that the final EIS says, well, yes, there's this and this and this health effects that are going to result to residents from the repeated subjection to the noise from the outlying landing field and the touch and go exercises. Is there some determination of harm that would move the Navy to say, all right, well, maybe this isn't such a good idea to be doing this in a residential neighborhood, and we, should.
I'm not going to speculate on. We haven't even begun the EIS analysis yet. I'm not going to speculate on anything that would be a conclusion in the EIS. What I can tell you, though, is there are a great many more operations taking place in Virginia Beach, for instance, where I live, around Naval Air Station Oceana, and the outlying landing field Centris, by an order of magnitude, maybe 10 times more annually, with the very similar aircraft, the Super Hornet aircraft, and a much higher population. But again,
right, so
I'm not going to get into anything that the EIS may or may not find, because, again, we're just very early in the process, just now beginning our analysis. So it would be way premature for me to speculate, number one, on what the EIS would find, and number two, what the Navy would conclude.
This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Compass. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans and was originally broadcast on February 3rd, 2014. A comment period on the Navy's current plan to add 35 or 36 new Growler aircraft to the Whidbey Island fleet and to increase the annual number of field carrier landing practices from 6,000 to 35,000 expires on January 25th. Until that date, comments can be submitted by going to the project's website at www.whidbeyeis.com. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.